again, medical education podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. Happy for the opportunity to chat with you today about a paper called The Impact of Programmatic Assessment on Student Learning, Theory versus Practice. It's going to be published in the May 2015 issue of Medical Education, and I have the great fortune of speaking with the first author of that work, Sylvia Hahnemann, who is from Maastricht University, and I've just discovered this is actually her premiere in medical education. After working in biomedicine, this is her first article in the med-ed field that's resulting from her master's thesis in the Masters of Health Professional Education program, also at Maastricht. Congratulations, Sylvia, on such an interesting and important piece as your very first entry into the field.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was very pleased that we were able to get it published.
Yeah, it's an impressive piece of work and building, as you know, very well on a movement towards more programmatic assessment of student learning. But as popular as that term is becoming, I imagine there will still be many of our listeners who are a bit unfamiliar with the notion or at least haven't looked into the details. So maybe I could start by asking you to explain your title, really. What is programmatic assessment?
Programmatic assessment was introduced a while ago by Gabby Case van der Vleuten and Lambert Schuert as a model. If you have assessment of and assessment for learning, you will need a different form of assessment to get that also linked to your curriculum and your educational practice, what you do with the students in the program. The model is based on each assessment or feedback or evaluations will give the students information, and they will use that information to guide their learning. A very important principle is that assessments are not pass-fail decisions, but they will give information and the student will use that information to further learn. And I think that's a very important aspect of the programmatic assessment model.
Right, so it's meant to be very formative and also meant to take into account the results from many different assessment activities rather than putting a lot of emphasis on any one at a given point in time. Can you tell us a bit about how this looks in practice for you at Maastricht and how the ideas have been implemented?
Yeah, so what we did is this is a graduate entry medical program, which we started in 2007. So then the first students started. It's a small program, and when the program was made, it was also planned to put theory into practice. And then Lambert, he was really a key player in getting programmatic assessment and also the portfolio as a central instrument for gathering information, but also for guidance of the students and also for assessment of the students to get that into the program. There are still assessments. That's also what is described in the paper. But we try to get the students to gather as much information as they can. This can be assessments or feedback from assignments or feedback from their peers or from their coaches or their teachers. And the mentor help them to look back at the feedback and use that in reflective activities, so looking back, making learning objectives, and to help them to use the information for their learning. So that's what we implemented in this small master program. We had an electronic portfolio. There has been development along the line from year to year. We are still actually working, for instance, on the electronic portfolio to get that more sophisticated and that sort of issues.
Right. So given the many theoretical benefits that might arise from this, of being very student-centered and much more comprehensive, were there significant barriers that you recall in terms of getting the model passed through the program and built in a way that would be acceptable to people?
Yeah, I think we had the same issues that when you want to implement a new sort of either a program or an assessment, yeah, you need the faculty, of course, to buy in, that they also need to be convinced that it's a different form of assessment, but that also that it will be better, or yeah, they need to put it into practice. So I think that's what we all went through, is that you need also to convince, for instance, a coordinator of a PBL module that their end of assessment test, if the student has not such a good mark, that in principle it's information and not that it's a fail decision. And I think that was a challenge, but every day we notice that for the students, at least, these end-of-block assessments are really perceived as summative. But also with the faculty or the teachers, you need to keep on emphasizing that we try to have information from assessments and not pass-fail decisions. And I think that's a key issue, what we found by interviewing the students, at least. On the other hand, by implementing all this information and gathering it in a portfolio and having students think about it, talk about it with their mentors, also helps them to self-direct their learning. So we still have challenges, but there's also beneficial effects of the programmatic assessment approach.
Right, and so coming back to the title of this particular paper, The Impact of Programmatic Assessment on Learning, can I ask you to tell our listeners a bit about how you went about trying to determine if there is an impact on student learning?
Yeah, we decided upon a qualitative approach to get the perception of the students. And for that, we did individual interviewing of the group of students in their preclinical phase. And that was also because if you look at literature of programmatic assessment, there are also other papers describing how programmatic assessment in practice is implemented and how does it work. Many of these papers in the workplace-based setting. And I think in this paper, or at least that what I wanted to do, is also see if you're not yet in the workplace, but in the preclinical environment, so that you are more in the PBL setting. And if you want to do a programmatic assessment approach there, yeah, what happens? And that's why we decided to do it in the preclinical setting and by interviewing them in this stage of their program.
So these are students who have only experienced this programmatic model since they entered the program, is that correct?
Yeah, so they did a bachelor. I think all these bachelors have the more or less classical assessment programs. Mm-hmm. So if, whether or not it's PBL or discipline-based, there are tests or knowledge tests that are summative. And then after doing a bachelor, they enter this program, and then they are sort of immersed in a different form of assessment. Yeah.
Right, and that transition, I imagine, is potentially challenging for some of them. Is that one of the things that was highlighted as you spoke with people about their experiences?
Yeah, it was diverse. In the interviews, I noticed that there were students that I could hear that they grasped the model, or even that by doing it, they were getting more and more convinced that it was much more effective to look back at this information and learn from it. But yeah, there were also students in the interviews who considered it either very complicated or still very difficult. So I think when you ask me about the challenges, I think that's also a challenge, that you have a diverse group of students who will have to find their way in this system, because it's a busy program. They have a lot to do, and it's a condensed program. And then the working on the portfolio, it's something they need to do next to everything they already have to do in terms of papers and assignments and practical trainings and that sort of thing. So right. It was a diverse response, but I think almost all students were having to look back at their feedback, and talking to it with their mentor was regarded as valuable.
Right. And was that the main benefit that they observed, or were there other things that they put forward that they thought was important?
I think it was an important benefit. I think with every portfolio, you need some sort of mentoring system or guidance. And I think that the mentor is available to talk to or to ask questions or to have them help you, for instance, with things. I think that was valuable for the students. And also looking back at the feedback and reflecting on that and setting learning objectives. I think that the coaching aspect was very highly valued.
Right. And the subtitle of your paper, Theory versus Practice, implies that there was a bit of a disconnect in some ways, and that the way things played out practically may not have perfectly reflected the theory. Can you tell us a bit more about why you chose that subtitle?
I mentioned it already briefly just now that I think programmatic assessment, you also are talking about formative assessment, and that the assessment is informative for the students. But that was definitely a thing that came out of the interviews, that if you have PBL block and you have an end assessment or even in-block assessment, that the students were really perceiving that as, okay, this is an assessment which I have to pass. They really perceived it as summative assessment. And I think that's a thing that it's not in the model, because there every assessment should provide valuable information for the student. But the pass-fail decision, that's something you would want to get rid of, because if you have that, the students will still study hard for these assessments and put their focus on passing the assessment. And that's something you would want to not have if you have programmatic assessments. And I think that is where the practice didn't need theory yet.
Right, right. So that leads, I think, to a nice way to wrap up our conversation, and that I think that what I'm hearing is you've seen lots of advantage and the process is continuing to evolve to try to address some of those issues. And so I'm wondering if you'd reflect a little bit for people who might be considering implementing this sort of strategy on their own. What would your current advice be with respect to how to maximize the benefit and minimize the challenges?
The implementation is very important. So what we noticed that we did this study in the preclinical phase, and there you have less flexibility for the program, but also for the student. If they have not such a good feedback or not such a good result, there's very limited opportunity to show again at a later opportunity that you have remediated or that you have increased your knowledge on that subject. And of course, if you do it in the workplace, you have much more flexibility and also choices that the students can make. I think that's also an extra hurdle if you would implement this, for instance, in a PBL setting. You really need to think about how you position your assessments and your assignments and the message you give by giving, for instance, grades or pass-fail messages. You need to think about that. I still think that looking at what we saw in practice, that you can have benefits from the programmatic assessment approach, but you need to think how you implement all your different your assessments, your assignments, your feedback, how you would embed that in a portfolio, that sort of thing. You need to think about that carefully.
Yeah, and good advice for any number of efforts at change and thinking through how do we go from theory to practice. And so I'm quite intrigued by this paper, not only for the lessons it's provided in terms of programmatic assessment, but because of the careful and explicit look you took at how the theory and practice interact with one another and continue to evolve, hopefully, iteratively.
Yeah, we definitely learned also from it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and for your first contribution in particular to the field, it is quite impressive and a very interesting master's project that you conducted. I'll just remind our listeners by way of wrapping up that the paper we've been discussing is The Impact of Programmatic Assessment on Student Learning, Theory versus Practice. As always, there's much more important and informative detail in there than we could ever get to in a brief conversation, but Sylvia Hahnemann is the first author, and thank you, Sylvia, for making the time to chat with me today.
You also, thank you very much.